And now Catherine Homan will introduce our guest presenter. I'd like to give Catherine a special thanks for putting together this service. She pretty much did all the work. And here she is to introduce our speaker.
Thanks, Lisa. I'm so happy to be here in this space. It's just such a good feeling to be here. And I'm pleased to be able to talk about animals in a Sunday service. I actually hold a degree, a Bachelor of Science degree, in animal science from the University of Minnesota. The surprising thing about that is they had animals back then. But more relevant, I think, is the fact that I'm a Unitarian Universalist, and I really benefited from the service a few Sundays ago where we broke up into small groups and talked about the seven principles. The first is obviously a powerful statement about where we stand. We covenant to affirm and promote the worth and dignity of every person. While I was thinking of this service, I actually had a discussion with Duffy, and he told me that within the Universalist faith, there's a lively discussion going on about whether we would change that to affirm and promote the worth and dignity of every being, which makes a huge amount of sense to me when I think about the richness that animals and the entire sort of biosphere brings to us. Also, the seventh principle calls on us to affirm and promote respect for the interdependent web of all existence of which we're a part. And I feel like that really calls on us to respect the dignity that all beings sharing this planet with us. I think we all know at this point that when we place humans in sort of a superior position, we end up doing harm to the entire planet and ultimately to ourselves. Just one tiny example would be the things that we've done to promote a really abundant food supply by use of agricultural chemicals has, in some measure at least, caused the decline in populations of our butterflies and our bees, which are essential parts of then creating a bountiful food supply. So it's that kind of action with those sorts of unintended reactions that I think we are all aware of now. Placing animals above or beside or not within that context of human life, I think, is where we really tend to go wrong. In kind of an interesting reversal, I'm going to read just a few words from American poet Walt Whitman, who kind of highlighted some of the ways that animals, in some ways, bring things to our lives that our fellow human beings often don't. He says, "I think I could turn and live with animals. They are so placid and self-contained. I stand and look at them long and long. They do not sweat, sorry, and whine about their condition. They do not lie awake in the dark and weep for their sins. They do not make me sick discussing their duty to God. Not one is dissatisfied. Not one is demented with the mania of owning things. Not one kneels to another, nor to his kind that lived thousands of years ago. Not one is respectable or industrious over the whole earth." I just love those words because in a lot of ways it says so much about what animals bring to our lives. In my back and forth with my little dog, I always feel that I could share my concerns, my joys and concerns. And when I share my joys and concerns, I can go on and on and on and on. But rather than do that now, I'd simply like to introduce Nancy Rosen from Intermountain Therapy Animals and her sidekick Eli to tell you a few things about this organization, which I think really embodies that side-by-side, that partnership with animals. So, Nancy and Eli, please.
I have to wake him up
for a second.
You're on.
We're on.
Shut up.
Up here?
Good. I'm not used to being up here.
Whatever you want.
What I usually like to do...
Ma'am, you need to use the mic.
Here, I can, oh, I do?
Okay. I can give you a mic if you'd rather...
Well, Eli likes to say hi. And so I'll kind of wander around, and if you'd like to say hello to him. Eli, come on.
You, the chorus might not let you go too
far.
Oh,
then I'll go back up there. So I think I met most of you at the door, and you probably remember his name. Probably not mine, and that's fine. That's what we do. Eli has been a therapy dog for 9 years. And first of all, before I start, does everybody know the difference between a service animal and a therapy animal?
No.
No. Good. Linda, do you want to? All right. A service animal are the animals that work 24/7 paired with somebody with a handicap that need them for guide dogs for the blind, hearing alerts, seizure alert, that kind of, the ones that have the vests on that say, do not pet. Okay, they are paired with that one person. We don't pet them. Okay, these are, and they also are protected by the Americans with Disability Act. They are allowed free access everywhere. Food, housing, transportation. That's a service animal. These are therapy animals. No protection from the American Disability Act. We are all volunteers in the organization. The handlers have gone through training. The animal with the handler has gone through testing to make sure the animal is appropriate. Their job is to seek petting. And they volunteer about an hour at a time. And then in Eli's case, go home and sleep on the couch. So our organization has been in existence, Intermountain Therapy Animals, since 1993. Started in Salt Lake City as the Good Shepherd Association. In 1997, the name was changed because people thought either you had to have a German Shepherd or that it was a religious organization. And he's going to lie down, I think. And since then, we have grown to well over 350 teams. And our mission, are you okay there? Is to, come on, enhance the quality of life through the human-animal bond. Our motto is Pets Helping People. I started in Intermountain Therapy Animals in Salt Lake in 1998. With my first therapy dog, Maggie, who was a Bichon. And then I had Casey, another Bichon. And then I moved here in 2002, and I started the Bozeman chapter. We now have well over 60 plus teams here. He and I are a team. And we are also in Helena and Billings, and ITA has grown to we have chapters all over. Is anyone familiar with the READ program? Reading Education Assistance Dogs? Thank you, Rachel. Okay. And Linda, yeah, you both have READ dogs. That is where the children read to the dogs. It's been our program since 1999. Started in Salt Lake and at the library, and people said, I've heard of everything now. But that program has grown to over 5,000 teams in over 15 countries, every state in this country, and just amazing, the power of the animals. This guy has been with me, as I said, for over 9 years, and we started out working at the Cancer Center. And it's interesting because much of our emphasis is on our dogs. We are our dog's advocate. At 50 minutes, it's like a psychiatrist's hour, right? He looked at his watch and he started walking out. And so we pay attention to that. We do not want to overuse the dog, because if you push the dog, what's going to happen? They're not going to go. They're not going to want to go. And might create a situation that is unpleasant. So we test for the fact that the dogs are obedient and that they want to interact with people. How many people here have golden retrievers?
Oh, that's not too many. Okay. We have a disproportionate amount of goalies in our organization, because they do make wonderful, wonderful pets, labs, therapy animals. We don't discriminate. We have all kinds of dogs, and a few cats, and a donkey. Did anybody see the donkey from the Pause to Distress last semester? Every finals at MSU, we have a program called Pause to Distress, where our therapy animals go into the library the last 2 weeks of finals, and we're there for 2 hours. We usually have 3+ teams, and the kids they swarm the animals. They love having them there. And we now have a therapy donkey that made 15 pages of Google. He was amazing. His name is Oliver. And I got an email from his owner after he went to the library. It said, he's trotting around the barn. He's insufferable. He wants more attention. You know, these guys surprise me constantly. Eli spent over 2 hours on this little boy's bed at the hospital, just lying there. And I was blown away. You know, they sense it. And they're tired after their visits. If it's 50 minutes, if it's an hour, if it's 2 hours, generally not two, but this case was special, the dogs are tired. They take a lot into themselves. Am I making noise? So this has just been an amazing organization. We're a total volunteer organization here in Bozeman. I've been doing this since 1998. He's my third therapy animal, and he's probably going to retire at the end of the year. What his favorite thing to do now, and what we've been doing for the past 6 years, is going to the schools. He loves to go to the schools, and as soon as I go into the closet where our visit bag is, he's there. So I know he still wants to go. And I have another dog right now who's two. She's another poodle. She is nowhere near ready. She's, as I tell her, she's not ready for prime time. She's much more enthusiastic about anything, but she jumps, she licks. That's not the characteristics we want in a therapy animal. They can be enthusiastic, but they need to be able to rein it in. And so he's just gotten better and better, but he's also almost 12, so he's done a good job. Does anyone have any questions? Are we allowed to ask questions then? Yes.
If we brought our pet in, our dog in, would there be a group of folks there that would say, oh, this dog may not be appropriate for our needs?
Thank you. Yes, the way it works is I conduct a workshop about every 8 months. People contact me. I send them a lot of information about what is appropriate in a therapy animal. We conduct pre-workshop interviews where we meet you and your dog. They have to be at least a year and a half and no older than 10, 9 or 10. Judging on that first interview, where we see how appropriate the dog is and how committed the handler is, because there are a lot of hoops to jump to go through this. You're not just bringing a pet in somewhere. We want to make sure that it's reliable and appropriate. And then the handlers go through a one-day workshop, and then we have a half an hour screening with the handler and the dog, where we see the obedience elements, we see the, we have wheelchairs, walkers, three or four people petting them at one time, loud noises. What we're doing is simulating what can happen on a visit. We don't want to frighten the animals, but we want to make sure that they're okay with all of it. And then there's a follow-up orientation. So there are a lot of hoops to jump. We don't take this lightly. Our red uniform is very visible, and we take it very seriously. Yeah. Yes?
How did you become really interested in doing this?
I had a friend in Salt Lake who was going to a meeting. And so I went with her. And I took my first therapy, Bichon Maggie, who is a wonderful, friendly dog. And I said, well, this is nice. I think I want to do this. So I tested her. This was before we did the workshop first. And they told me, have her sit. She sat. And they said, have her lie down. I said, well, she doesn't know that. And then they said, have her stay. And it's like, she doesn't do that. And, you know, she's really friendly and saying hi to everybody. What's the big deal? So then when they told me afterwards that she's a really nice dog, but we're sorry she didn't pass today, I said, what do you mean she didn't pass? I should have known what was going to be on this test. I was curious. They went back and went, oh, watch out for this woman if she ever joins. So then I took a workshop and I retested her and she passed because I taught her how to lie down and to stay. And then I said, okay, you got me. This is where I want to be. So I started volunteering in the Salt Lake office. They found me a little job there. And then I moved here. And I basically brought everything with me.
Yes. I was wondering if any of your teams or you have had experience with service people who have PTSD.
We have...
Repeat the question, Susan.
Okay, if any of our teams work with PTSD, we love to. I know there's our Billings chapter has an organization that pairs rescue animals with some of the veterans with PTSD, and then they work with them. No, I think that's a valuable, valuable thing, and I would love to be involved in that. Yes?
Where do you get most of your funding? Repeat the question.
Where do we get, thank you, Rachel. Rachel was one of our volunteers, and she always kept me right on the list. Our funding and grants and donations, the members pay a nominal registration fee. We pay for the workshop, but it's a tiny, tiny, tiny portion of it. Most of the salt, our bosun comes from Salt Lake, and so they're the mothership, as it were. And we have had a few little fundraisers here, like we've had garage sales, but most of our written materials and everything else comes from Salt Lake. And that's, they have, they're about to do a big gala, which they do every year. So they have big fundraisers and they also have donations. Mm-hmm. So, was there a question over here? Yes.
What do the teams do in the schools?
We go into the classrooms.
Question?
What do the teams do in the schools?
Sorry.
No, that's great. I love it. I might, after 10 questions, remember. And you should never let go of the leash, which I'm just doing. The children read to the dogs. And that is an amazing program because it's one-on-one. And the children are reading to a non-judgmental animal. And they, just the power of that animal. But one of the first occurrences I had with Casey, who's my second Bichon in therapy animal, is we were at the library and this little boy came over and said, I don't read very well. And I said, well, that's okay, Casey doesn't either. He sat down and read a book. And he said, this is the first book I have ever finished. And we high-fived, and he came over later and said, I'm taking this book home. He was so proud of himself. There were no peers, there were no adults, there was nobody judging him. He sat there petting her the whole time, and he felt comfortable, and he read her the book. It was younger than his age group. Casey didn't care. I didn't care. So the READ program has been incredibly powerful and successful. They don't have to be our volunteers to do the READ program, but they need to be a member of some registered therapy group. So, yes?
I was going to elaborate on the reed and the, with little children.
Use the microphone, Linda.
With tiny children, I have a huge voice.
Rachel won't let you do that. But when the child is so young at the library that they're not reading yet, we used to sometimes have children that young that would come over, and we would just, I always would have a picture book along, and I would say, well, oh, could you show Micah these animals? Oh, she's never seen a shark before. You tell her about the shark, or you tell her about the monkey or what, the horse or whatever it was. So you could adjust down to whatever level of child you were working with.
That's okay.
So,
is this going to be something nasty?
Is it still? Oh.
Am I on? Okay.
So, Nancy, a question for you. Would you like to volunteer for a READ program or connect me with someone that could help for 2 to 3 year olds and 4 year olds?
Okay, the question is, would I like to connect Carol?
Yes.
With the 2 to 4 year olds?
And right, through the YMCA.
That could happen. I mean, the gist of the program is for the struggling readers. But the whole purpose is to make reading fun. So if it's a jump start, you know, maybe not the 2 year olds.
But the fours.
Yeah, the ones who are maybe 5 plus, who are starting to read and to just kind of whet that interest in reading and books.
Okay, just curious,
thank you. Yeah,
why?
Yes.
How does someone who is interested in having a therapy animal come to them or their organization? How do they go about contacting you and getting that set up?
I'm not sure I understood.
Okay, if someone is interested in benefiting from your services.
Okay, okay.
How do they go about getting you into
that facility?
Yeah.
Okay, the question is, if someone is interested in having a therapy animal come visit at their facility, how do they go about doing it? Contact me. And I have some information and my phone number. There's a business card. There's also a bookmark on the table back there. So sometimes when we have a new group of volunteers, which we just did, I just did a workshop about 3 weeks ago, and we have 10 new volunteers now. And they're in the process of, they have their orientation, and so they'll be good to go soon. And sometimes they'll have a specific facility in mind that we already do not go to. We go to a number of the retirement homes here, the number of schools, but we're always looking for new places to go. And so I'm very pleased when somebody contacts me. And then the way this works is we sit down, I have a form. We tell you what you should expect from our volunteers, that they will be on time, we will be recognizable in our uniforms, the dogs will be clean, appropriate, and then what we expect from the facility. You know, that there'll be a person there that's kind of in charge and knows we're coming, because we don't just stop in. We go on a regular scheduled time. So, I know with Peter, when I first came here, I was do I need to wind it up? Okay, I'll finish with this. I needed to find a place to hold our first workshop. And, you know, we do the evaluations in the workshop. At that time, we were doing the workshop on a Saturday and evaluations on a Sunday, which kind of let the church out. And so I contacted Peter, who was working in Mountain View at the time, and Carol. And I said something about animal therapy, and he went, come on over. So I took Maggie, and we were there for, 2 hours or something? He just took me all over to the rooms to visit with people. And we still have been very loyal to Mountain View for our testing. So he was great. That was our introduction. So thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, everybody.
Thank you.